and welcome to Zero Hour. This is Tim Bauman. Today's show is an ongoing series that explores Richmond's thriving art scene and the people that make it happen. Every Friday at 12:30, we sit down at a Richmond cafe and have lunch with one of these folks. The conversation is live and spontaneous, so pull up a chair and meet some fascinating people. Today, we are talking to a well-known Richmond person, Joe Seipel. Welcome, Joe, to Zero Hour. Thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here, Tim.
So someone said to me once in an interview, Joe, make your life come alive.
All right, I'll do that.
For me.
I was born in Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Well, and what was the date there, Joe?
I was a rather large baby.
We have a half an hour here.
Okay, all right. I'll speed this up a little.
Okay.
All right, born in Wisconsin, Sheboygan. I will tell you, I went to a grade school with 28 kids in it. It was a cultural mecca down there in that part of the country.
Absolutely.
And went to a little junior college in Manitowoc, Wisconsin, called the University of Wisconsin-Manitowoc. I was not from a wealthy family by any means, and so had a great teacher there named Doug Baldwin, who my sophomore year took me to New York. I ended up at the Cedar Tavern, and I had always wanted to be an artist and was, of course, an art major.
Wait a minute. You went to New York and ended up at the Cedar Tavern?
At the Cedar Tavern with my teacher.
Which is where most art...
All the abstract expressions.
Absolutely.
So we're sitting there, and I met these incredible people from the Brooklyn Museum School and from all over, and it was right when the topless bathing suits came out and all of that.
I'll never forget this woman sitting
across me with this incredibly low-cut blouse on, and these guys were drinking and loaded and cursing and doing whatever, and I'm sitting there, and I said, I think this art thing is where I'm going to go. I said, I have something about this I like. Anyway, so then I went to the University of Wisconsin.
It was one of those moments.
Okay. Then I went to the University of Wisconsin-Madison and had, again, some great teachers. And then Doug Baldwin, who was my sophomore teacher at UW Manitowoc, was at the Maryland Institute. And he wrote me a letter and said, have you thought about the Reinhardt School of Sculpture in Maryland Institute? And he said something interesting in the letter. He said, it would be good for you, and you would be good for it. And so I said, that's interesting. So I applied and got a full fellowship. And so I went to Maryland Institute, to the Reinhardt School of Sculpture, and had a terrific faculty member there named Tom Clancy, who is sort of an artist in New York.
Yeah.
And he really made a big impression on me also. And from there, after I got my MFA at Reinhardt, then I worked as a rigger and a bartender at Bertha's.
Yeah, that's usually the way it works, right?
Exactly.
You've got an MFA and then work as a rigger and a bartender somewhere.
I was a rigger, a bartender, and a part-time teacher, and I was making pretty good money, actually.
Better money than you're making as a professor, that's
exactly,
for sure.
Exactly. And then after a couple of years of trying to get a teaching job, I got a call from VCU, and they offered me a one-year contract in 1974, and
just the other day.
What is this, 2007?
So we're talking 30 years.
So 34 years later, I'm at still at VCU teaching. And
okay.
It's been a great career.
Yeah.
Great career. Thank God for that woman in the Cedar Tavern who made me make my decision.
Talk a little bit about the work that you've done, the sculpture work you've done. Because, as I said earlier, the interesting thing about you is how many different parts of the art world you've been involved in. One of them, obviously, early as a student, and then as a teacher, but also as a sculptor. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, I'd done a lot of things as an undergraduate and moving into graduate school that were sort of all across the place. I think, like any young student,
you really
play the field, so to speak, and try all kinds of things. So I ended up making this thing, but it turned into something different, and it turned into an object that one might, instead of it being kind of a classical piece of art, it turned into what looked like a construction object. And I did this fake company at that time called the EnviroPlug Division of Seipel Manufacturing, and sold bogus stock in it, and made this object, which was actually about 8 feet by 8 feet by 6 feet, and had a brochure and gave out business cards, and it became a year-long project. But I used it. I'm saying this really to say, because it's the first time I used my name, and in a piece,
right?
Because it was Seipel Manufacturing, Viral Plug Division of Seipel Manufacturing, the gully plug.
That's an important thing to have.
And
I've often needed one.
So we took it to the New England Industrial Show and showed this at the John Hines Civic Auditorium as an actual company, and had a stockholders meeting at the Playboy Club in Baltimore. As a matter of fact, David Byrne, who was a student there at the time, played the accordion, and his buddy played the fiddle. They were in a band.
Oh, perfect. So did you guys do polka?
That was our stockholders meeting at the Playboy Club. And
so let me get this right. You're doing the polka at the stockholders meeting of the Playboy Club with the Playboy bunnies. Okay,
I got the
image now.
The bunnies actually said, this was written up in Playboy's VIP magazine, the bunnies actually said it was the best party they had ever had at the penthouse. And it really was funny. A good Jewish friend of mine dressed up as a priest. Another friend of mine brought a piece of luggage filled with beer. It was great. But anyway.
So the lesson is you can have fun making art.
So I was getting around to the fact that, so having used my name in this thing, all of a sudden sparked my attention. And since I couldn't come up with any good ideas, I started just doing drawings, hundreds of drawings of self-portraits, using my name, using my face, using whatever. And that got me into work that I've been doing now for, for decades, which is really focusing on myself, not focusing on myself, but using my face or my name as the center of my work.
So, really?
Mainly because if I use somebody else's face, it didn't make any sense to me. Because why would I put some other poor person in my piece? You know, I should at least, if I'm going to take the glory, I should take the blame, right?
That doesn't look anything like Joe Seipel.
So I've done a whole series of self-portraits. I mean, some of them, a lot of them robotic and mechanical. One of them's a little caricature with kind of a big bobblehead that talks to you when come in the gallery and tries to sell itself to you. And another one was my head sticking out of the wall 10 feet tall with a hand coming out of the wall above that and actually operating a little puppet of myself that danced. And so it was me making myself dance you ... And so you'd walk in the gallery and hear these little pitter-patter feet back there.
But isn't that all of our lives?
Yeah.
That voice in our head, dance you ...
Exactly. So I've sort of been, and then I did another one with it was a 6-foot head on about a 7-foot, I got a 6-foot pedestal, I guess, and a 6-foot head on top of that made out of, it was a collage of rabbit fur that I got at Tandy Leather called self-portrait with 71 dead rabbits. But again, my face. So I've been using my face in my own work.
Okay. Yeah, fascinating. Are you doing anything now? Are you doing any?
Yeah, I have a big piece that's been in my studio for going on 10 years. Actually, maybe more.
Must be a really big piece.
It's very big. It's 28 feet long and 12 feet tall and 14 feet deep. And
hang on. 14. Usually, when you're talking to artists, they're not talking 14 feet deep. 14 feet deep,
wide or whatever.
No, I know. But I mean, it's interesting concept.
Yeah, it's a big piece, and It's a takeoff on classical work. It's called classical opera, and it has time delay relays, and it's got a fountain in it. It has it has three real figures, and then it has some projected animation, and sort of the love triangle going on there. And then my face is in it telling lies about the piece. A little robotic head of mine comes out and talks. And
tells lies about the piece.
And one of these days I'm actually going to show this thing.
Right.
And it's all built. I just have to do the electronic work on it now, which is...
I mean, without getting, you know, sort of pseudo-heavy here, what's it about? What's going on there?
The cliche, you have to see it. But started it was I got a portion of a very large classical plaster cast, but it wasn't finished. It was a plaster cast of a woman, but from about the breast up there was nothing. So I had to make the head up for it, and so I built this clay head with kind of an ice cream, you know, Dairy Queen kind of hairdo and all that. And it was the one time I started a piece and I said, I'm not going to pre-plan this piece. I'm just going to sort of hang on to the tail of the dog and see where it goes. So I kept adding to it. It became really additive. So I had this figure, and then I said, well, it should really be on some kind of a hill. So I built a kind of a little cliff for it, about 4 feet tall. So now this figure's there, and she actually had remnants of another child with her. So I built the child. And so then she was kind of protecting the child, and then I said, well, she should have a male counterpart, and so I built about it.
Is it fair to say that you're I've had, for some reason, this has come up four times in the last four, not for some reason, maybe, but the whole concept of play. And by that, I mean in the most sophisticated way.
I would
is something that has really been important to you.
Yeah, it was. I mean, it. I don't know if I'd call it play. I've used 100 gallons of resin on this thing, so it's
so at least it's been expensive.
Expensive, and not. It would be a far stretch to say this was fun to do, but at the same time, it's fun to look at. So, and then the whole thing is, yeah. And then there's when there's
a figure. That's interesting when you say that. It's a far stretch to say that this would be fun to do.
Oh, there's enormous amount of hard work in it.
Okay, okay. I think that's important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we're talking big.
Yeah.
The figure, the male figure is if he stood up, would be 9 feet tall.
Wow.
And, you know, all of that had to have molds taken, mm-hmm. big rubber mm-hmm. molds taken off of it with fiberglass right. mother molds and all that. So it's a lot of work.
Yeah, okay.
And, but anyway, it's getting, I mean, I'm at a point now where I could show it. I have to do it within the next year. I've got to get it out of my head.
Can you get it out of your studio? I mean,
it comes out in 7 pieces.
Okay, I was going to say.
Actually.
Like the guy who built the boat.
Yeah.
You'll have to come over to the studio to see it. It's the last piece I'll ever do, and it's never leaving.
It's actually one of the problems now because it's built to a point where it's hard for me to start on anything that would be at all dirty in the studio because
right.
it'll just
right.
get that dirty.
Yeah.
But
okay. All right. Well, that's fascinating. You've also been... and I hope I don't embarrass you when I say this, but an enormously successful administrator. I mean, normally when you think about, you know, artists are in one camp, administrators are in another camp, and obviously you've built a wonderful bridge between those two things. We were talking before, and you had mentioned that you'd gotten the International Sculpture Center's Lifetime Achievement Award as a sculpture educator. And, you know, that's quite a... That's quite a recognition for a sculpture curriculum that you put together. Do you want to talk about that sort of that? I don't know if it's a transition, if it's a parallel path in your life. You know, being an administrator. You know, but when most people think of administrators, they think of bureaucrats. Anybody who's listened to this for the last 13 minutes or whatever knows you're anything but a bureaucrat. You've brought your art to your administration. It almost sounds like. Would that be fair to say?
Well, you know,
or at least your creativity.
I actually may have some kind of genetic flaw because I really enjoy it. There are some similarities to it. I mean, you look at much of art making, along with passion, but is problem solving.
Yeah.
And I love the notion sometimes of the situations you get into. I mean, when I got the reason I got that International Sculpture Award, which was a really wonderful award, and I was very humbled by it, actually, mm-hmm. I must say. But one of the reasons I got it was because of a curriculum that I didn't develop alone, but right. myself and, you know, six incredibly talented faculty members at the sculpture department put together. We realized we couldn't teach. Sculpture became such a wide-open discipline. There were people doing sound. There were people doing video. There
right.
were people doing
right.
carving stone. There were people making wood fabrication.
Right.
There were people doing rubber molds. Well, no one faculty member could teach all that. So what we did was we split up the technical end of it, uh-huh. and we started offering these short workshops,
right. okay.
one credit, 6-week workshops on right. mold making, or the same thing with certain kinds of welding
right.
or bronze casting.
Right.
So the faculty members were allowed to just go into the critique process and talk to students more about the content of their work
mm-hmm.
versus the how-to.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
we were able to... in some ways separate that. You can never totally separate
it.
No,
I understand.
But it allowed the faculty time to really talk about what is the important stuff, which is ideas and quality of ideas and the historical context and all of those things.
Because it can all get jumbled.
About.
I mean, you're trying to do so much with such limited resources. The idea is, all right, I've got these limited number of faculty members. I've got all these things I want to try to teach these kids in a limited amount of time. What's the most effective, efficient way to do that?
Absolutely.
And so it's sort of a... So you sort of stepped back and said, okay, so let's teach the technical aspects over here in these limited kinds of context, and that'll free up the faculty to then come in and talk about process and content and other kinds of important areas.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it was.
Yeah.
And it really freed up the faculty to, I mean, you still obviously work with
sure.
how to make things. And,
right.
and I will say what's one thing that VCU Sculpture Department has always had great reputation for, and that's our students come out and they really can make things.
Yeah,
they've got great
yeah.
Vocabulary, physical.
I mean, it sounds
skills.
Almost silly, but I'm sure there are plenty of sculpture departments where that doesn't happen.
At less and less, there are more and more that teach it less and less.
Yeah.
And it's a real problem.
Yeah.
Because if you come out and you don't have a good physical vocabulary, how to make things, how to make your ideas real, I think you're at a disadvantage.
I think you hit on something really amazing there. And you talked about problem solving. And you can see that in almost any discipline. And, you know, so artists really aren't, you and I know this, but some people don't. Artists really aren't all that different than the rest of the world. The kinds of problems they're solving are very different than maybe what a business person would solve. But when you made that connection between problem solving in your art and problem solving in your administration, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Well, there's a great, you know, Daniel Pink, who wrote a book called The Whole New Mind, wrote an article in the Harvard Business Journal. It's called The MFA is the New MBA.
Really?
And it's gotten a lot of attention. And what he's talking about is, you know, all businesses now are looking for people who can think on their feet, who can solve problems, who can think, the cliched words, out of the box.
Right.
And that's what we teach students. That's what art school is about.
How do you get away from the, well, I'll just say it. Okay. Certain, maybe this is an immature concept, but the idea is I'm an artist. I make art. I don't want to be influenced by the market. I don't want to become part of the marketplace. I want to develop my own voice. If people respond to it, that's fine. If they don't respond to it, then I guess I live my life in poverty. But I became an artist because I want to express what I want to express, and I want to have as little to do with business as I possibly can have to do with it, because at some point the gallery and the public's pressure for you to continue to be successful, there's a pressure there to make compromises, to maybe not change your work as much, to maybe not really follow your own voice anymore, but to be more influenced by the voices around you. How does that tie into anything we're talking about here?
Yeah, I mean, that's why you have to be careful to get a good gallery. I mean, one of the things we have really strong connections to New York at the VCU School of the Arts, and one of the things that we do, and I mentioned to you before the interview about this professional practices class that I teach, we really connect. We go to New York as part of the class.
Talk about that
a
little bit.
4 or 5 days
there. I think that's probably where we're at right now. Talk about that a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let me talk about a part of it, and then I'll back up and talk about the bigger picture. But by going to New York and taking these graduate students to New York City, the one thing that they realize is that these gallery directors and gallery owners, in most cases, are really decent people. They're small business people or big business people,
right, yeah.
But they want to see the artist succeed as much as the artist does. They're not. It's not us against them. Mm-hmm. You just have to make sure you get a good, ethical person running this gallery. But in most cases, the people that I've met are in fact really wonderful folks who love to deal with art.
Right.
They put their financial holdings at stake
to
do this in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. But anyway, back to the Tremaine Foundation. I'll talk now about the bigger part of that.
The Tremaine Foundation is a professional practices class.
Yes, it's the Emily Hall Tremaine Foundation.
Mm-hmm.
They were interested in making sure that MFA graduates in sculpture and painting would be able to leave school and be able to support their lives as full-time artists. So how do we do that? So they asked 6 schools to get together: Columbia University, CalArts, Chicago Art Institute, Parsons, Boston Museum School, and VCU.
Wow.
And for 2 years, for 2 years we met, and we worked on a curriculum that would help enable these young artists to be able to do this. We've been teaching it. I'm finishing my 5th year of teaching this now, and we've received from them about $150,000 in grants. No, $180,000 in grants. We just received another $75,000 at the School of the Arts.
Great.
But so what the course is, and it enables us to bring in visiting people and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So we have a really comprehensive class that we taught. We bring in a CPA who talks about setting up a sole proprietorship.
Oh, that's fabulous.
Dealing with Schedule C and all that, because young artists come out, that's what they are. They're small business people. Mm-hmm. They have to know how to deal with it.
And they do have to know how to, if they're going to be successful. I mean, you know, if you sit around and wait for them to come to your door, you're going to be sitting around a long time.
Absolutely. So they know that. We bring in a trademark a trademark attorney, and we talk about contract negotiations, trademark, and copyright. Mm-hmm. We have a speech coach that works with them. They do about three or four presentations, audio, slide, and discussion presentations of their own.
So that
work.
When they go into a gallery, they're not fumbling around and dropping slides on the floor. And
that's right.
Okay.
And then we look at the quality of the images that they have in their portfolio. We talk about what opportunities may be out there that they, well, it sort of ask them to look inside. Where are their skill set? Mm-hmm. And most of these people are really sharp.
Right.
I mean, they know all the computer programs. They're good designers. They can do all that. So what can you do that you can make a living on 4 mm-hmm. days a week, mm-hmm. give you 3 full days in the studio,
right?
Or 3 days a week, give you 4 full days in the studio, while your work is maturing before you're going to be able to make a living on your art. Some people never can, but some people can. And so
and nobody until you guys came along ever bothered to show them how.
And then we just left 4 days in New York. As I was saying, we went to these galleries. Then we also went to the New York Foundation for the Arts.
You didn't take these kids to the bar you went to? I think that's missing from your curriculum.
Actually, we had an alumni gathering there.
Oh, good. Okay.
With about 150 people from VCU who are now living in Brooklyn.
Great.
Which was really terrific. Really terrific. And watching how
I was just thinking back about what a great impact that bar had on you and your career. You might want to add that to your curriculum.
I think somebody's trying to call you, Tim.
Well, that's too bad.
Your broker.
It's the director of the radio station.
Now that I have no idea what I was talking about.
Well, we were talking about this wonderful program you've put together, and I was ribbing you about taking these kids to bars, and obviously what you've done is, and I mean this, I mean it's profound. What you've done is profound. It really is. No wonder you won awards for this kind of thing. You also won the Outstanding Alumni Award from your old University of Wisconsin at Madison. Was this in part because of that? Or just because you're a hell of a nice guy? I mean, aren't you in the phone book as Mr. Nice Guy?
Shh. All right, back to talking. So much for that unlisted number.
We can edit that out.
University of Wisconsin, let me think.
Award.
Yeah, it was a great award. I mean, it was really sweet to go back to your old stomping grounds get some credit for being in the right place at the right time for 30 some years. I mean, it was really terrific. It was really sweet. And they, it was fun. My family lives in Wisconsin, so they came and got to see that little Joey got an award from his old school. And it was great fun.
It was old school. That's some school. That's no small little, we're not talking junior college here. We're talking University of Wisconsin. So that's fabulous.
Yeah, it was a great honor. It was nice.
Okay. So moving right along, have you ever thought about getting into banking?
Well, I'm probably not supposed to divulge this, but knowing you're a stockholder in this bank, it was interesting. About, I guess it's been 5 years ago, a good friend of mine who had opened up some banks before, had been chief financial officer, et cetera, and said, would you like to be a bank board member? Would you like to help me start a bank? And I said, I don't know much about that, but it sure sounds interesting.
With my background in sculpture and administration.
But what I was able to give towards this group of 12, 13 people who actually started the River City Bank was a sphere of influence that I had. It's actually an interesting situation because there are 3 academics on this bank board, which is very unusual in the banking industry. But it's been an incredible learning situation. I've been in bank director school. I've learned an awful lot. I mean, And it is right brain, left brain thinking. But
has it helped you with what you're doing?
It made me something that happens, I think, as I've matured is getting into situations that are interesting. As you know, I used to own a restaurant with 2 other people, and now the bank business. It gives you a broader look at who's out there. People. I mean, and I've
That's
got some great
true.
Friends through this bank board and through the stockholders in this bank, and who have become as good a friend of mine as some artists have. And,
exactly.
And I think what it does is it makes you understand the world better. Mm-hmm. There's you know, there's good and bad in every one of these
fields.
Excuse me. And
instead of the sort of the, you know, oh, I'm an artist kind of, you know, or, oh, I'm, you know, and it works the other way. I think businesses, any business person who has an opportunity to meet you is going to be transformed in terms of their sense of what an artist and an art administrator is about.
Well, there's all kinds of, we have all kinds of suspicions about everybody. Everybody thinks, oh, banker, they must be such and such. And
right, there's sort of these anal, uptight people, and artists are all these flaky, crazy, creative types.
Actually,
where,
there's a bunch of really great creative people.
Creative people, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I've said before there are, and when I say this, the word God, I mean it in a generic way, but I think there are many, 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 many ways to get to God.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, some through art, some through business, some through whatever. So I think it's an interesting thing. Future plans. What are you thinking about doing after you leave here? Like, are you going back home and rake leaves?
I was doing that this morning, which is why I got to lunch a bit late. Future plans. You know, I've been working really closely with Rick Toskin, our dean at the School of the Arts, and we are salivating at the thought of having a brand new gallery.
Ah, that's right.
VCU.
That's right.
VCU
replace
Arts.
The Anderson Gallery. So essentially a small museum, really.
Actually, we're looking at a museum, And, you know, there's much discussion going on about
Right
now. And I'm hoping that that sometime in the next number of years that we're going to make this a reality. Mm-hmm. It would be just an amazing thing for the city of Richmond.
Right.
I mean, if you look at towns around the country that have put in new art centers, like really forward-thinking contemporary art centers. They've reaped the benefits. You know, the Wexner Center
in
Columbus is a great example.
Right. And
Des Moines has a new art center that's really hot. And, you know, we've got...
Yeah, I don't think the day of that has come and gone. I've heard people say that, you know, the day of these centers has come and gone. I thought,
No, not at all.
I don't know.
Not at all. I mean, it's, you know, here we have the top-ranked public art school in the country, and we deserve a top-ranked
sculpture's up there somewhere, isn't it?
Sculpture's number one.
Ah, number one. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. And
thanks to your hard work. Well, listen.
As I have to add, as my great friend Rick Toskin told one of our students who was just accepted to Yale in the sculpture program.
What is that?
Yale University. And he said it was too bad she had to go to a second-ranked institution.
It is a shame. It's tough. It's tough when they have to settle for Yale.
That's right.
Well, this has really been enjoyable for me, and I'm sure for the people listening. Your energy, your creativity, your willingness to play, to experiment, to be open to other people, new experiences, and then ultimately to somehow integrate all that into a life that sounds like it's been very interesting and very exciting and continues to be. Thank you very, very much for coming in, Joe Seipel. What is your actual title down there? Have they anointed you yet, or what's your deal?
I am senior associate dean and director of graduate studies.
Okay, and is there a website for you? Is there anything like that?
It's actually, if you go on to the School of the Arts and then you click sculpture.
www.vcu.edu.
Yes, and then you click sculpture, and then you click faculty gallery, I think it is, you could find something in there.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you again for taking time out of a really, really busy life and a busy schedule.
I have a question, though.
Yes.
Do I have to leave the tip?
Yes, you do. Yes.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Nothing's
Can we get some more coffee
this...
over here? Like a lot more?
It's free
coffee
at this point.
Well, that's about it for us, folks. Thank you for listening. We hope to see you again for lunch again on the radio next Friday at 12:30. And once again, this is Tim Bowring, and you're listening to WRIR 97.3 FM, Richmond's Indie Radio. It's radio for the rest of us. And I think it's 20% show.
I think 20%.
Okay.